हेलो फ्रेंड्स, आई एम मिसेस गंगा खेडकर। आई वर्कड इन द बैंक, अ नेशनलाइज्ड बैंक दैट इज़ बैंक ऑफ इंडिया फॉर मोर देन 39 ईयर्स। आई हैव वर्कड इन वेरियस पार्ट्स ऑफ द बैंकिंग एरिया एंड ऑल्सो इन वेरियस सिटीज इन इंडिया। टुडे I am going to talk to you on Negotiable Instruments Act 1881. See, this act came into being in the year 1881. But then negotiable instruments were prevalent in India much before that also. This is an act which has codified several areas of trade and whereby the act has got some meaning which has helped the traders in doing their business in a very safe and smooth manner. Trade is something that has been going on even in the ancient days. People were buying and selling goods in the retail market, in the wholesale market. People from foreign countries traveled to India. Indians went to foreign countries and sold their goods. They traveled by foot. They travel by ship, they travel by various modes which are available during those days. When goods were sold or bought, they had their own means of settling the payment system. Mostly during those days, only barter system was in vogue. You give me something, I'll give you something else in return. If I sell you this much quantum of item A, you pay me this much quantum of item B. So, you know, this barter system was going on. Then subsequently, when barter system was not so effective and they found certain flaws in the system, silver coins, gold coins came into existence and they started settling the payment through gold coins and silver coins. Now, when they had to purchase gold coins from the goldsmith, how would they pay the goldsmith? So, they started writing on some piece of paper and giving it to him that this is the money I owe you, I'll pay you during so and so period or in over a period of so many months, so many days. And then slowly the system of putting it in writing, the payment came into effect. And once something is put in writing, it has to be very effective. You just can't write in any language, any mode, any words. So, over a period of time, all this started taking shape, and then they wanted something which will be so effective that it can be made applicable even in different cities and different parts of the country, and not only this country, even in other countries. So, slowly, 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 the system of writing the payment means started taking shape, and then it became a practice to write it only in a particular manner, and that became universally acceptable. So, let us start with chapter 1. We are going to talk about negotiable instruments. What was the objective? How this was structured and how the act actually became enforceable in India, how the act came into force, how the act came into existence and how it became enactable. As I said, it's really not clear as to when exactly negotiable instruments came into vogue. Traders were doing their business, buying, selling within one city, outside the city, moving from one place to another, traveling by road, traveling by walk or traveling by bullock carts or even ship from one country to another. They used to take all the goods produced by them, go and sell it in another place, bring those things from there which were not available here and do this transaction. And this was going on even 500, 800 years back. To start with, they had barter system. You give me something, I'll give you something else in return. But then the barter system doesn't work well for all products, all goods. It's okay for certain goods, but not for all goods. So the barter system had its own deficiencies. So they had to resort to some other way of dealing with trade. The solution which they found was making payment through silver coins or gold coins, because silver and gold are metals which are acceptable all over the world. So they started using silver coins, gold coins as modes of payment. There are indications which say that even in the 12th century, that means 1101 or 10, in those almost 1000 years ago, 900 years ago, these instruments came into force. Gold coins were used as means of payment. But there also there was some restriction. How to really make it effective? Now, when there were gold coins which were exhausted, a trader has gone from this country to another country. Imagine 900 years ago, 800 years ago. The coins that he had carried with him got exhausted. So what he did, he started giving in writing. Next trip, I'll give you this much payment. Now, I owe you so much of amount. I'll pay this to you in the next trip. I'll go back to my country and bring more money and then give it to you. So he started giving it in writing. Now, this written document, this written piece of paper became a payment instrument. So this is how slowly, slowly the system of giving in writing came into force. Also, see, when the trader is going to make payment in gold coins, he has to have stock of gold coins. So he goes to the goldsmith and says, please make so many coins for me. I'll pay you this much. Now he has to pay to the goldsmith. There again, if he has something to pay, he will pay. Otherwise, he gives to the goldsmith in writing. So this is how actually the system of making a written document come into force. Now, once a person gives it in writing, it has to become effective. It has to be acceptable by both the parties. What I write should be accepted by the other person who's taking that written document from me. So it has to be in a language which is acceptable to both of us. The one I'm making the payment, the one who's going to receive the payment. So slowly, slowly they started giving a better and better touch to the words mentioned in the piece of paper. And once the system was sort of codified or sort of smoothened, even the courts began to recognize these documents as payment instruments. So even in the 18th century, courts in England accepted the bills of exchange as commercial documents. Checks became commercial documents when people started giving it in writing to the goldsmith. You know, these goldsmiths in those days used to even act as mini banks. They used to say, okay, you give me this much, I'll take from you, then I'll pay to this fellow. You give me, I'll give him loan. You give me loan. You know, this way it went on. So the checks were a kind of bill of exchange, but only between two parties. So that also got into shape when people started doing business with the goldsmith. In India, there was a lot of trade going on. People from China, people from Greece, people from Italy, they used to come to India, and likewise Indians also went to Sri Lanka, they went to other countries by ship to sell their goods. So since a lot of trade was going on in those days, these trade documents, the commercial documents, also came into existence, and there was a need felt for settling these issues, if any, between the traders. Any disputes that come up had to be settled. For that reason, an act was required. And in the year 1881, this act was passed, the Negotiable Instrument Act. Before that, in England already there was some acts, and they got a Act of Bill of Exchange Act, and our act was based mostly on the act which is passed in England. The Negotiable Instrument Act was passed in 1881, that was much before the independence of India, much before India got divided into Pakistan, Sri Lanka, Bangladesh, all these countries. So this act is applicable to the whole of India because it was enacted in 1881. Today this act is more than 130 years old, but the act was passed in such a nice manner that there are hardly any changes made to this act. Each and every aspect of the commercial transaction between buyers and sellers was taken into account, and every angle of the instruments was taken care of, and the act was passed after that. So this act is so effective that even today it holds good for all trade transactions. As I said, there were hardly any amendments required for this act. You know, even the Constitution of India has undergone so many amendments, but Negotiable Instrument Act, there were hardly 2-3 amendments. The only major amendment that has taken place is with regard to payment. In case the payment is not honored and the check is returned, then it is held as a criminal case, criminal offense, only under certain circumstances. And what is the remedy available? This act was passed some 10 years back. We'll see that later on. Okay. Now we come to the act per se. We are talking about Negotiable Instrument Act. First, we have to see what is a negotiable instrument. What do you mean by the word negotiable? What is the meaning of the word instrument? And what it actually talks about? Now, what is a negotiable instrument? We have to talk about the definition. See, this act does not say what is a negotiable instrument, what is the definition. There is no precise definition of a negotiable instrument in this act. It does not say a negotiable instrument means so and so, so and so. What it says is that a negotiable instrument means a promissory note, a bill of exchange, or a check payable to bearer or order. I mean, these three documents together, they are negotiable instruments. It also says that it is a document whereby one person has to pay money to another person. So, a negotiable instrument actually means a payment system, a piece of paper, a document in writing which says that somebody has to pay to somebody else. It can be payable on demand or it may be payable after a particular period of time, depending on the trade transaction. Where there is actual buying and selling across two parties face to face, you pay with one hand, take from another hand the goods that you want to buy. So there is payment immediate. But if you are not going to pay immediately, you want to pay subsequently, you give it in writing. Okay, I'll pay to you after 2 months. Give me the goods. I promise that I'll make the payment to you after 2 months, but please give me the goods now. Or if there is a manufacturer, he'll buy the raw material, process it, sell it, and when he sells and he gets the payment, he will make the payment to the supplier of the raw material. So he has to give the raw material supplier something in writing that I'll make the payment to you after 2 months or maybe after 15 days or 20 days depending on his manufacturing cycle. So what he has given it in writing, that is a negotiable instrument. So a negotiable instrument is a document whereby one person has to pay money to another. Now, I have purchased something from Mr. X. I have purchased the goods. Now, I have to make the payment. I don't have the money now. So, I tell him, I'll give you later on. I give it in writing. Now, this paper, will it remain with me? No, I have to give it to you. I have purchased the goods from Mr. X or from you. I have to hand over this paper to you and you will be keeping this paper with you till I actually make the payment. So this document will be with the person who is going to receive the money. Okay, so the person who has to receive the money will hold the document. Now, since he is holding the document, he becomes a holder of the document. Now, if I have mentioned in that piece of paper that I am going to make the payment on 12th of October, he will keep the paper with him till 12th October and then give it to me and say, come on, make the payment. Today is 12th October. He will show the paper to me and say, today is 12th October, make the payment. So the document remains with him. He is the holder of the document and he is the person who is going to receive the payment. Now suppose Mr. X, who is going to receive the payment from me, he also buys certain things from somebody else and he wants to make payment to someone else, but he doesn't want to pay from his own pocket. He will say, see, look, I am going to get money from this lady on 12th October. You take this paper, I am giving it to you, you collect it from her. So you will get the money directly from her. So what he does, he is going to transfer that document, that written piece of paper which I signed and gave him. He will say, please collect it from Mrs. Ganga Khedkar. So he can give this document to some other person for the transaction which he has done with that other third person. So this piece of paper can be transferred, can be passed on to some other person also. In this way, transaction between Mr. X and the third party becomes very smooth. Now see, under this act, under the Negotiable Instrument Act, the Negotiable Instrument Act says that it is either a promissory note or a bill of exchange or a check. So it mentions only three documents: the promissory note, bill of exchange or a check. But in practice, over so many years, we have more and more documents which are similar to nature, similar in nature to the promissory note or a check or a bill of exchange. So they are also included under negotiable instruments. These are government warrants, hundis, demand drafts, bankers' pay orders and share warrants. Now government warrants, the interest the government pays to different people who have invested in their funds. It is a promise to pay, maybe on the same day or on future or on demand. Hundis, what are hundis? These are all actually bills of exchange. Only difference is that we call bill of exchange in English. A hundi is a Hindi word and a hundi is a bill of exchange written in some Indian language. Because see, in those ancient days, English was not the main language in India. People were doing trade in the local language. So naturally they had to give the document in writing in the local language. So it was a hundi. That was the word which was used in those days. So a hundi is a bill of exchange. A demand draft. A demand draft is a document signed by the bank on behalf of its customer. And it is a promise to pay to a third party when he produces that instrument in the bank. So a demand draft is also a check, only thing it is issued by the bank. So it's a modified form of a check. If a check is a negotiable instrument, obviously a bank draft can also be a negotiable instrument. A banker's pay order. Now I have to make payment to some college for tuition fees. If I sign a check of my own account and give it to the college, they may or may not accept because they don't have faith that my check will really get passed or it will get bounced. I may not be maintaining balance or I may give a stop payment instruction and I may not allow the check to get passed. So the college says, no, I don't want your check. You give me a check from the bank. So I go to the bank, pay the money of the tuition fees, and I tell them, please you issue a check in favor of the college. Now the bank is issuing a check signed by the bank, not by me, signed by the bank, bank official, and it is in favor of the college. When the bank is issuing a check in favor of the college is satisfied. Yes, I am going to get the payment. Bank cannot default. So that type of a check issued by the bank, and payable locally. That is a banker's pay order. Share warrants, of course, are issued by private companies or public limited companies where we have invested money, we have purchased shares, and the income derived from the shares is paid as share warrant. They are also similar to checks. So these are also recognized as Negotiable Instruments Act. But the Negotiable Instrument Act has given a general meaning, and they have mentioned only these three documents: check, bill of exchange, or promissory note. Now, these other documents which I have mentioned, they also have the same quality of a negotiable instrument. So that is why they are included. Although it is not mentioned in the definition in the Act, but they are negotiable instruments. What are the characteristics of a negotiable instrument? We say that a bill of exchange is a negotiable instrument, a check is a negotiable instrument, but a promissory note is a negotiable. Now, these are all three different documents: promissory note, or a bill of exchange, or a check, or even bank demand draft, banker's pay order, share warrants. Now, they are all different documents. They have their own qualities, but all of them have certain common characteristics. Now, what are these common characteristics? And what are the benefits from these negotiable instruments? See, a negotiable instrument can be accepted in trade provided it gives some benefit to the giver and the receiver. Unless I am going to benefit something out of this negotiable instrument, I am not going to accept it. I'll prefer to take money, cash, instant, rather than going for a instrument which is going to only promise me money on a future date. But I say, no, I am ready to accept this document because I will be getting certain benefits out of this. Now, what are the requirements of these documents? How they should be so that both the parties get to benefit? Now, the first thing is, it will entitle the beneficiary to a certain sum of money. Now, see, in a promissory note, what does the person write? I promise to pay rupees so much on so and so date or on demand. So, what is the promise? The promise is that of money, that I am ready to make payment to you rupees 10,000 or 1 lakh or 20,000 or 80,000 on so and so date, maybe on 5th of March or 12th of July. The date I am putting, it may be, or I just write 2 months later. I put today's date and say 2 months later I will give you this much payment. This is a promise that I am making, and I am putting it in writing. So, what is the promise? The promise is of making a payment, giving money. In a bill of exchange, a person who writes the instrument, he tells, A is writing the instrument, he is telling Mr. B, Mr. B, place pay to Mr. C, rupees so much on so and so date. So, there again, what is the instruction? Pay the amount. In a check also, I am writing the amount and telling my bank, pay to Mr. C, pay to Mr. X, rupees so much. You can debit my account and pay to him. Now, all these documents, all these instruments, they are going to mention the amount. What is that amount? Is different from different transactions. It varies from transaction to transaction, business to business. But the basic thing is that there has to be a mention of a money. So, it entitles the beneficiary to a certain sum of money. So, this money is the main factor in every negotiable instrument. I am going to get money, so I accept the negotiable instrument document. He is going to get the money, so he accepts my check. Somebody else is going to get the money, that is why he is ready to part with the goods that he is selling. So, the basic characteristic is that this negotiable instrument will give you some money, maybe now or maybe later. The next characteristic is that this document is freely transferable. See, it is not something which is embedded to the earth. It is not a machinery which is fixed to the building. It is a piece of paper which I can simply hand over. If I write a promissory note in favor of Mr. X, I promise to pay rupees 1 lakh on 5th of November. This piece of paper, I can hand it over to Mr. X. So that means I have transferred it from my hands to his hands. When I write a check in favor of my friend who wants urgent money for buying his flat, he is falling short of money, he wants 5 lakhs, I write a check in his name and give it to him. That means the check has passed from my hands to his hands. So this is transferable. This is the basic character of a negotiable instrument, that it is freely transferable. It can move from one person to another person. And what have I to do? For making it transferable, I have to only hand it over. So that means deliver it. I have to simply deliver it to that person. Hand it over. Now the person who gets it from me, he can also pass it on to somebody else by writing on that instrument at the back side. He will sign there and he will say, please pay to Mr. Y. I have given it to Mr. X. But Mr. X has to pay to Mr. Y. So he signs on the back and says, please pay Mr. Y, and signs it. Now Mr. Y has got this document. So it has passed from my hand to Mr. X and from Mr. X's hand to Mr. Y's hand. So it is transferable from one person to another, from that other person to another person, and from him to another person. This can move on from various hands. So it is a transferable document, and it happens only by means of simply delivering it to that person. And when it has to go to three or more parties, they have to sign at the back. That is known as endorsement. You endorse it in favor of further people, and so endorsement plus delivery. So if I say, please pay to Mr. X only rupees 1 lakh on 5th of November. Mr. X will get the payment. He cannot further give it to anybody else because I have written the word only. But if I just write, please pay to Mr. X or order the sum of rupees 1 lakh on 5th of November, or I promise to pay, I am going to pay, or somebody else is going to pay. If I am not mentioning only, pay Mr. X or order, or even if I don't write order, I just leave it. But Mr. X can sign at the back and say pay to Mr. Y and sign it and then give it to Mr. Y. It is endorsed in favor of another person and that person can get the payment. So this is known as transferability. A check, a negotiable instrument, a bill of exchange is transferable by means of delivery and endorsement, or just delivery. The transferee gets a good title even if the transferor does not have one. Now this is the most peculiar aspect of a negotiable instrument. Any document, a negotiable document. What is this word negotiable? What does it mean? Negotiable doesn't mean simply passing it from one person to another. There is a peculiar quality of a negotiable document. What we are trying to convey is, now see, usually a negotiable instrument is used in trade transactions. Now the trade transaction can go wrong. I have purchased certain books from one company and I give them a check for the payment. I have made a payment of 7,000 rupees to the book company and I have purchased books worth 7,000 rupees. Now the book company has made the payment to the publisher for getting the books. Now they have transferred my document to the publishing company. My check is endorsed in favor of the publishing company. Now what has happened? This book company which has sold me books have actually sold books which I did not want, or they did not sell the books that I had asked for, They did not sell me books, which were really books, but only piece of paper, or they sent me an empty carton without the books. So the transaction between me and the book company has failed. So actually the book company is not entitled to my check. I have written 7,000 rupees and given a check to the book company. But the transaction between me and the book company is not a valid transaction because the book company has cheated me. So now the book company is not actually entitled to this payment. But the transaction between the book company and the publishing house is valid. It has been a genuine transaction. And when the book company transfers my check to the publishing company, that is a valid transaction. So the publishing company, the publishing house, when it gets the check, it has got a good title. It is entitled to receive the money from the book shop, book company. Between me and the book company, the transaction has failed. But between the book company and the publishing house, the transaction has been a real genuine one. So the publishing house is going to get a good title, even though the book company, the bookshop, has not got a good title. So between A and B, the transaction is void. But between B and C, the transaction is genuine. So C is going to get a good title, although B does not have a good title. But B can pass on a good title. This is what a negotiable instrument says. The Act says that the transferee gets a good title even if the transferor does not have one. See, in normal circumstances, suppose I go and buy a laptop. I buy a computer from a shop. I pay 40,000 rupees and get the laptop. Between me and the shop, there has been a genuine transaction. Later on, it is found that this particular shop which was selling these laptops, they had actually stolen it from customs office, because the customs office had confiscated so many electronic goods, and this somebody got hold of it and they purchased the stolen goods and sold it to me. So although I have made payment of 40,000 rupees, for me it has been a genuine transaction, but still the stolen good is a stolen good. I do not get good title to it. So what happens? In this case, a thief cannot pass on a good title to the buyer, and that buyer cannot in turn pass on a good title to his buyers. This is very much true in the case of all mercantile transactions. But where it comes to a written document, a negotiable instrument, the picture changes. There it says that even if I do not have a good title, I can still pass on a good title by endorsing that instrument in favor of somebody else. So this is precisely the very basis on which this entire act is formed.